of the department led by Ntate Munyela, because we received apologies from the ministry about the minister and deputy ministers. Also welcome South Africans who are on the platform, various platforms provided by Parliament. I'm going to request that I do not put on the video, honorable members, because where I am, the situation is such that the network might disappear or might be unstable, because I'm in a deep, deep, deep rural area here. So I'm going to humbly request that the committee allows me not to switch on the camera. The second thing is that I have requested Honorable Mpanza that in the course of the meeting, he may have to take over because of the unstable situation of the network where I find myself, so that we don't wait for me to be cut and then we say who can take over the meeting and so on. We are going to be dealing with two matters today. Honorable members, it's a matter that relates to how we deal with...
You are allowed, Chairperson, because it's your birthday, so anything that you want, it's allowed.
I like how you are written here on the platform, Muela Sadek. Thank you very much for that. Yeah, Muela Sadek. And thanks to the members and the staff for the birthday messages one received yesterday. One is grateful of that as a member of the team. We are going to be dealing with two issues today from the department. It's just a briefing on matters that relate to poverty, inequality, and unemployment in the context of our relationship with a BRICS partner called China. We are also going to be, as presented to you, honorable members, be dealing with a briefing from the department once more on the matters that the first one is related to China with regard to our bilateral mechanisms. The second matter will be about state-owned properties that are outside the country. Do we have apologies, Babalowski?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to and honorable members. The first apology, Chair, is from the minister. She's attending the cabinet together with the deputy. And then Deputy Minister Portas has got bilateral meeting. And Deputy Minister Marsha Kholamini, she's out of the country. DPG Munyela, Chair, will be leading the delegation from the department.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, thank you very much. That was brought to our attention 2 days ago. And Dr. Munyela, you are welcome and your team. You can start with your presentation.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. And thank you for acknowledging the apology of our principals and our DG, and also let me join the colleagues in wishing.
Sorry, Chair.
Yes, sorry to the Chair and to
DG Munyela. No, Chair, I just wanted to make a suggestion. I don't know whether I thought we were going to give us that opportunity on the agenda itself.
Okay, Ntate Mpanza.
Yes, Chair. I wanted to propose, as the department normally does when they are doing presentations to us, that instead of separating the two presentations, item 4 and 5, we just combine them. In their presentation, they combine it and then we then engage in that way. So I don't know whether I will be out of order, but If it's not acceptable, then I'm happy with the way the agenda is arranged. Thanks.
Yeah. No, it's actually my fault, Honorable Mbanza. Thanks for that. That was the approach we had communicated, yeah. So, not Moela, DDG, proceed with the entire presentation, then we'll engage there.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Committee. Once again, thank you for acknowledging the apologies of our principals and our DG. And let me join the excellent
recording in progress
in wishing a happy belated birthday to our chairperson. We wish you everything of the best for this year and the coming years. Many blessings. Colleagues, finally, I just wish to say that I'm accompanied by a team which is going to be dealing with the two comprehensive presentations after a very brief introduction. I've got a very long speech in front of me, but I am going to compress it in the interest of time. Honorable Chair, firstly, to just thank you for this opportunity to brief the committee on the mechanisms with the People's Republic of China and how they contribute to addressing South Africa's domestic imperatives and specifically the triple challenges of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. China and South Africa have long-standing relations reinforced by solidarity and a common vision of mutually beneficial socioeconomic growth and development, the promotion of South-South cooperation, and global adherence to a rule-based international order. Our bilateral relations were formally established in 1998, as the Honorable Members know, and are underpinned by a comprehensive strategic partnership agreement, which was signed in 2010, and a 5 to 10 year strategic program of action. This is, in fact, the highest strategic partnership you can have with the People's Republic of China. So that speaks to the cordial relations that exist between the two countries. Honorable Chair, as you may be aware, a critical aspect of our bilateral relations with the People's Republic of China is the endorsement of the One China policy. This was done in 1998. It is a Chinese foreign policy principle aimed at addressing the question of its territorial sovereignty and articulating to the international community that the regions of Tibet, Hong Kong, Macau, and Taiwan are all part of mainland China. Although the South African government recognizes China's position that Taiwan is an inalienable part of China, in terms of our treaty with the People's Republic of China, South Africa continues to maintain its own ties with Taiwan, although it's limited to economic, scientific, educational, and cultural exchanges. And this is why we've got the liaison office in Taiwan, and they too have one here in Pretoria. Now, just to summarize, Honorable Chair, in the context of South Africa's strategic partnership with China, the bilateral relations are anchored on four pillars, namely, number one, political bilateral relations and multilateral cooperation, number two, economic trade and investments and tourism, three, technical cooperation, and lastly, people-to-people relations. It is through this structured mechanisms that we seek to drive these four pillars and ensure alignment with the government's frameworks, such as the National Development Plan, the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan, all meant to contribute to the achievement of South Africa's domestic economic imperatives. Now, I'm going to conclude and allow my colleagues to take over the presentation, but just to say that there's been some notable achievements as well as challenges experienced in terms of fully implementing the agreements, all the agreements and the memoranda of understanding that was concluded with the People's Republic of China, including the outcomes of bilateral structured mechanisms, such as finalizing infrastructure projects. Evidently, more could be achieved and will be pursued in the relationship with China, as there are areas of potential growth as defined in the 10-year strategic program on cooperation, such as in areas of defense, on the oceans economy, in agriculture, on energy, technology, innovation, as well as development and many other areas. Now, in terms of our mandate as a department, we strive to ensure that South Africa leverages its comprehensive strategic partnership with China to advance our core national interests through high-level engagement, effectively utilizing the various structured bilateral mechanisms at our disposal in terms of our ties with China. The department is working hard in close cooperation with other government departments and business stakeholders to ensure that we maximize benefits to South Africa and its people at all levels. The presentation itself does contain some of the details that I think would be of interest to members of this portfolio committee and the Honorable Chair. And now, with your permission, hand over to Ms. Cindy Swankuku to take the Honorable Committee to our presentation. Ms. Swankuku.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Munyela. Good morning to the Chair of the Portfolio Committee and the members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Cindy Swamkuku. I would also like to introduce Ms. Yoli Swambebe, who is the Acting Chief Director responsible for the East Asia and Oceania. And this file is directly handled by her. So where there could be more questions of clarity, she will also be available to respond. Thank you very much to the introduction by Mr. Munyela. I would request that we go straight to slide 4, because everything else has been captured in that introduction. As Mr. Munyela has outlined, we have 4 bilateral relations and multilateral cooperation pillars, and we are referring to multilateral in the focus of the BRICS cooperation, as well as FOCAC, the Forum for China and Africa Cooperation. We are stating that, Chair, we have the political engagements through the high-level engagements, the ministerial, as well as other foreign policy imperatives that have to connect back to the domestic challenges, as it is outlined in the introductory remarks. Through FOCAC, we have been able to chair for 2 times, to co-chair FOCAC in two terms. And we have also received a 1 billion rand allocation, which is proposed for infrastructure development projects. We are trying, Chair, to respond directly to the question that is expected of us of how does the relationship that we have with China assist the country to achieve the objectives and also addressing the triple challenges. So that's why you are outlining various initiatives that we have. We are referring to that 1 billion, which is a proposal for infrastructure development projects. We are still discussing the funding modalities with the Chinese between our national treasury and their national treasury, including our reserve bank. And then in 2021, in November, the FOCAC hosted the 8th ministerial session. And in this ministerial session, the outcome was the 9 FOCAC goals that are linked with our domestic imperatives, because they're focusing on providing assistance technically and financially on healthcare, poverty reduction, agriculture, trade and investment, digital innovation, green investment development, as well as peace and security, among others. And we have also been, we've also received a 1 billion dose commitment for the rest of the continent on COVID vaccines. And this is going to be manufactured through joint ventures with African countries, which means now that it also assists in developing the domestic capacities in vaccine manufacturing. When it comes to BRICS, as it would be known to the chair that we joined BRICS in 2010, and we have been able to chair in 2013, as well as in 2018, and we are going to chair again in 2023. This for us is a very strategic engagement, and it assists us with a platform where we are able to achieve South Africa's national interest, as well as its foreign policy imperatives and objectives. We are stating, Chair, that we have, in March 2022, launched the BRICS Vaccine Research and Development Center. And this is also an initiative that emanated from South Africa's chairship of 2018. And also we have received from the NDP, the New Development Bank, an amount of 54 billion in terms of, 5.4 US dollars. Billion US dollars, where we are able to improve our service delivery in a number of areas. We are also stating that the relationship we have within the BRICS context has assisted us improve our trade. And amongst ourselves, we are able to state that we are trading at an amount of 354 billion US dollars. And we are hopeful that this current year we will be able to get to 500 billion in the current financial year. In the second pillar, Chair, of economic and trade and investment and tourism, we have observed an increase in our bilateral trade from a very small 1 billion total trade in 1998 to 534 billion rands, which may be close to 50 billion US dollars by 2021. And this is attributable to the strengthening of the relations, as Mr. Munyela had outlined, that the depth and the strength of our relations can be attested to by the value of the trade at 554. Our trade, we are stating that it includes Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Macau, the special administrative region of China. In 2019, Chair, we also had the Chinese companies visiting South Africa with a delegation of procurement, where they signed procurement agreements with a number of South African companies. And this initiative is aimed at improving our trade balance, because we have stated that the trade is always in favor of China, understandable for a number of reasons. They are a bigger economy, and also they are one of the destinations of our exports. But we wanted to make sure that in the basket that we are sending to the trade basket that we are sending to China, we have value-added products that gives us a value in terms of rents, not only the volume when we are sending lesser processed goods to China. And we are stating, Chair, that the investment of the Chinese cumulatively exceeds 100 billion rand. And we are stating that we are estimating the jobs that have been created, direct jobs and indirect jobs, to a number that is 200,000 jobs created. Chinese are investing more in the infrastructure development, in the manufacturing, in the information, digital economy, and also the automotive sector. Some of these jobs, the chair, will be looking at the Beijing Auto Bike Company that is based in Kuha, for example. So these are the practical jobs that we are talking about. And we are, South Africa, we were the first African country to export beef to China. And this is the number of, these are the products that we are sending, especially in the agricultural sector. Our maize goes to China, the products, animal products, also the dairy, and that is agro-processed goods as well. So we also joined the Belt and Road Initiative, which is more on the infrastructure development, and therefore we are cooperating in that area. When we come to pillar number three, that is looking at the technical cooperation, we have received a number of projects from the Chinese government. One, the establishment of the TVET centers in Tshwane, two of them. We are also stating that this project is at implementation phase. And the Small Harbors Infrastructure Development Project, the team of experts from China will be visiting South Africa next month until August. We've also started on the high-speed rail project, and the technical working group of this initiative met in January of this year. And also we have applied for the grant funding for the Focus Schools project. We are stating that, Chair, that the projects that are received through the Focus are also supporting the African Union Agenda 2063. And this is part of that cooperation. And then this fourth pillar, which is the people-to-people cooperation, it enhances, it is the use of soft power in terms of diplomacy, and we are reaching out to other areas as well. Moving speedily to the structured mechanisms, I think Mr. Munyela has stated the alignment between the work that we are doing with the Chinese and the objectives of the new of the National Development Plan and the ERRP. But just to lift that, the levels of engagement in this bilateral, in the structured bilateral mechanisms, is at the level of the Deputy President through the BNC, and also the strategic dialogue at the level of the minister and the joint working group, which is at the level of the deputy minister of DIRCO. And the high level people-to-people exchange mechanism is at the level of the minister of sports, arts and culture. When we go to the next slide, Chair, we are stating what we have achieved through these bilateral relations. We are looking at the increase in terms of the total trade between ourselves, as we have stated that by 2021, we had the total trade at the value of 544. And you will agree with us, Chair, when we're saying that we have observed the increase, and what we are stating as a challenge is the trade deficit. That is, what we are buying from China is less than what we are selling to China. So all these other means that were stated before are helping us close the gap in terms of the trade balance between our countries. And also the challenges we are stating in their investment, in the Chinese investment, is adherence to the CPPE codes and also some of the local legislation, and that includes the labor law. We attach the volatility of the rent to this increase in terms of the trade balance, and also in terms of the investment in South Africa. The jobs that have been created, the 5,000 that we are stating through the direct investments, we're observing that we don't get the full transfer of skills. And that is what we are lifting as a challenge. COVID has impacted on the tourism numbers. And we have seen that the tourists from South Africa, though they were decreasing to an extent from 2017, 2018, 2019, but 2020 and 21 were hard hit because of the lockdown restrictions. What is attributed to these challenges in tourism, Chair, is one, the crime that they often state as an issue. They feel their tourists are not safe in South Africa. And we are working on the challenges in terms of the processing of visas. And we are also citing that there is no direct flight between ourselves and China might also limit the tourism numbers. We've received quite a number of scholarships, Chair, from the Chinese government, and we could not have an uptake during the COVID restriction period, and we are going to see an improvement in that post-COVID. The challenges of students now during COVID times was the time difference, where they had to work from South Africa and getting lectures from China. And that was a challenge. And for the socioeconomic reasons, some of the students would not have an easy access to internet connection. What we are also lifting is the issue of the medical students. Those who study medicine in Chinese universities are not able to do the clinical training that is going to the hospitals, because you need to have the correct language to speak to the patients there. Now we are communicating and working also with the Health Professionals Council to make sure that there is a way of having a process of having internship of those students who are studying medicine in China to have internships in South Africa, where they can be able to converse with their patients, therefore receive the clinical training, and language becomes the barrier, as we have stated. And we are stating, Chair, that we are currently, through the Department of Higher Education and Training, supporting 57 students from the sponsorship of 180 scholarships. The reason why, Chair, we only have 57 out of 180 sponsored scholarships It's because there needs to be a top-up amount to their living cost of living allowances of the students. So the Department of Higher Education could afford topping up for 57 students. And from cumulative, from 2018 chair to 2022, we are stating that 2,000 South African officials and technicians have been trained in China. And we are also giving the number of the Confucius Institutes, which is about more about the Chinese culture. We have six of those, and we have classrooms in South Africa, and we have the last one being opened in the University of the Western Cape, the Confucius Institute, that was opened in 2019. This is part of the people-to-people mechanism. We continue with the structured mechanisms. Chair, in the past 5 years, from 2018, we have 10,000 students, South African students, who have participated in the learning the Chinese language, and we are also stating some donations that we have received from the Chinese government, especially during the COVID period, to the Department of Basic Education. Also, to support and encourage those teachers who do well in the STEMs, that is the science, technology, maths, those teachers get awards and they're able to be on a fully paid study visit to China. That is more of the capacity building and also experience sharing between our two countries. In 2020, Chair, we have the Chinese government has offered 25 South African artists to train 25 South African artists on digitization. They're also doing a lot in terms of joint research programs and working as research institutes. We also have 20 South Africans trained in tourism, and these include the frontline staff and also the tour guides. And some of them also taught in the Chinese language, the Mandarin. So we are making all these initiatives, Chair, to be able to attract the Chinese tourist to South Africa. And as you would appreciate, Chair, that we are talking about an industry that contributes 6% to South Africa's GDP, and we are talking about a market for tourism, that is China, that has quite a substantial number of people, and we also have capability to travel to South Africa. So we are making their landing to South Africa softer through teaching the tour guides the Mandarin language. Chair, I want to summarize and move fast when it comes to agriculture, forestry, and fisheries. We have signed the MOUs, and as we have stated, Chair, some of the sticky issues in terms of the trade balance will be issues of the sanitary and phytosanitary protocols that we don't agree on, and we are able to engage bilaterally to make sure that all the market access issues are dealt with and we're able to access the Chinese market, and therefore we do comply with what is expected from our side as they do on our side. Way forward, Chair, we are saying these bilateral relations, we are using them to leverage to get more economically, to get more also technical transfer of skills, and therefore we are of the view that there is value add in the relationship that we have with the Chinese. What we need to improve from our side is intergovernmental coordination as we are implementing the 10-year strategic program. As outlined in the introduction from Mr. Munyela, is that the 10-year strategic program was signed this year, and this is elevating the relations and looking forward into the 10 years so that we position ourselves to be able to optimally gain from this partnership and all the other areas that we need to focus on. And we are stating that we are receiving a lot in terms of job creation, and it is a priority area for us, and that makes a response to the question of the triple challenges when we're looking at the jobs that we are getting through the investment of the Chinese and also through the improved trade with the Chinese, because what we produce from South Africa and selling in China, it is, if we produce in volume, we're able to employ more South Africans. That's why we're improving in terms of our trade, of our exports, and the readiness of various sectors of our economy. We are working, we are using, Chair, all the mechanisms that we have outlined, and we are also impressing and emphasizing the point that the people-to-people exchange mechanism makes it easier for us to engage one another or each other when we understand more about each other through the people-to-people mechanism. And we are of the view, Chair, that the relationship that we have with the People's Republic of China is adding value, and it is making a substantial contribution to addressing the triple challenges that we have, that is job creation, and also poverty alleviation, as well as reducing the levels of inequality. That is our submission, Chair. We have come to an end of our presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Nkutu. As the Honorable Chair requested, we are going to then proceed to the next presentation on our state-owned properties. I will not necessarily do the intro, because I think what's covering the intro is in the actual presentation itself. So, Ms. Shabalala, Chief Director, Property and Facilities Management.
Good morning, Chair, Honorable Chair, Honorable Committee Member, Portfolio Committee Members, DDG, Tracy Munyela, and colleagues. My name is Hlengiwe Bengu. I'll be taking through the portfolio committee for today, and Ms. Chabalala is supporting me in this presentation, and Mr. Patela, who is the director in that section. I will move straight to page 4 of the slides, where we just indicating the background around the portfolio, the property management portfolio of the department. Just to recap that this portfolio was provided to or was allocated to DECO in 1999 from by the Minister of Public Service and Administration to manage and procure properties and accommodation abroad, including aspects regarding leasing, purchasing, alteration, and maintenance. I would like to indicate, Honorable Chair, that the slide made a mistake, that the disposal was also allocated to DECO in the year 1999, which is not the case. The disposal was not allocated. It still remained with the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure. Now, Chairperson, from where we were in 2018, the department at the stage, we had 911 rented properties But as of today, we have about 625 rented properties. So there is a significant reduction. It is one, based on the missions that have been closed. Two, it's also on the positions that head office had to freeze due to the fact that we didn't have enough compensation of employees. And then we are also owning about 163 state-owned properties abroad, and that number has not changed since 2018. And I have also included the breakdown of the portfolio, as you can see. Now, Honorable Chair, in slide number 6, what we like to highlight with this slide is that when DPWU at the time allocated this function to DECO, they provided DECO with files that relate to the properties that they were transferring to DECO, which is the 163 properties. However, not all files could be located or could be received from DPWI. Based on that, we then, as a department, embarked on a project to obtain title deeds and valuations of the state-owned properties. That was done via our missions abroad. These valuations were done through the municipalities in the countries of accreditation, and they were also done through professional valuators where municipality report could not be obtained in that regard. This then resulted in the current immovable fixed asset register that has been audited by Auditor General on an annual basis since 2007-2008 financial year. With the work that we've done as a department in evaluating our properties and trying to get title deeds, unfortunately, we still have one property that we are still struggling to get an original title deed, and that property is in Tehran. And our mission and also our line function desk is working in getting us the title deed through the authorities there in Tehran. Honorable Chair, in slide number 7, now we would like to take you through the journey of property acquisitions, development, and management. This is since DECO took over the property portfolio from DPWI. Now, before then, DECO was relying on DPWI, so there were other governance issues that then DECO was heavily relying on DPWI during that time. So when we took over, we then had to put those governance issues as a department. One of the things that we had to do is to establish the units within the department that will deal with property management. And in establishing that unit then had to come up with a property acquisition strategy that currently has been approved, and which is what we are using as a department. And this property acquisition strategy, Honorable Chair, it aims at reducing the rental expenditure that the department is having. We are geared more into acquisition and developing the pieces of land that we have as a department. Secondly, this unit has also done they have now developed a property management strategic framework. This framework, Honorable Chair, is helping the department, or is guiding the department's strategic decision-making on property investment, management, and disinvestment, and it also ensures a return on investment, value for money, and sustainability with our properties that we have abroad. The third thing that this unit also has achieved is the maintenance plan templates that they have developed for our missions abroad and the allocation of the budget to mission. In the previous financial year, which is 2021-22, our mission spent 42 million on the day-to-day operations or on the day-to-day maintenance of our properties abroad. And we also have this unit that has been established. It has also developed a refurbishment plan. This is a plan that is used by head office now to maintain the properties abroad. And what has been allocated or spent in the previous year in this plan is about 8.2 million in refurbishing our properties. Now, Honorable Chair, what I also want to highlight with this refurbishment plan is that, which is on slide number 7, is that we, with this plan, we want to, as a department, we want to outline how the properties will be managed and maintained in a manner that promotes operational safety, which is a big issue right now, employees' health, which is also an issue that we are dealing with, and environmental protection and compliance. Compliance specifically with the countries of accreditation. One of the issues that I can highlight with the compliance is the issue of asbestos that we have been dealing with in the current year and also in the previous years, very, very much hardly in Europe region. So that is what we are doing with this refurbishment plan that has been established by this unit since we have taken over from DPWI. Continuing with the property acquisition, development and management, which is slide number 8. Now, we are talking to the year that has just closed now, that the department, with all the achievements that we have done and that I've mentioned in the previous slides, we then also managed to complete 27 maintenance projects with our state-owned properties that we have spent from the money that has been identified from head office to do those maintenance abroad. Now, Chairperson, Honorable Chen, what I would also like to highlight with you is that over the next 3 years, which is the MTF years, the department has been allocated 796 million for this portfolio. And this 796 million, the department wants to use it or wants to focus this 796 million mainly on the major maintenances of the state-owned properties. We have decided this based on the current dilapidating state of our properties. Now, for us to do this and for us to achieve this, Honorable Chair, we have developed a long-term maintenance plan. And this long-term maintenance plan that we have developed, we are now also within us, we have developed a custodian asset management plan. This custodian management plan, it will assist us to then indicate to National Treasury why should we keep the 796 million over the 3 years and why do we need more money over and above 796 million. In this custodian asset management plan, you will see that we are talking about acquisitions that we want to do, which currently the acquisition that we are looking at is in Kenya. And then also we are looking at developing the piece of land that we have, one of the piece of land that we want to develop, which I will cover also later on, is one in Delhi and then one in Luanda and then another one in Gaborone. We are also looking at Munich. Then we also have refurbishment projects that will be covered within the custodian asset management plan and also the disposals, because as we dispose, we have to spend money with the work that needs to be done, Honorable Chair. Now, in slide number 9, just to continue on what we need to do or on what we are doing in the year 2022-23. With the state-owned properties in the current financial year, the maintenance plans for the mission to do their day-to-day maintenance has been allocated 50 million for them to do that. However, the work that needs to be done by head office, which is of the 123 properties, there's major work that we have identified within those missions. One of the work that we have done to identify the major work that needs to be done is condition assessments. The condition assessments were performed in Vienna with our two properties that are there, and the outcome is that the renovation of those properties have to be performed immediately. We also done a condition assessment with Rome for the three properties that we have there, and the report says we need to repair all three properties that are there. We have done for Copenhagen with the two properties that are there. With Copenhagen, it's a bit different because the report says we need to do a refurbishment, meaning that we have to go deeper than the other properties that I've just spoken to. We also have done Ottawa. With Ottawa, it's renovation. We've done Munich. With the report in Munich, it says we need to demolish the property and then rebuild, which is why I was mentioning to you, Honorable Chairperson, that we need to protect the money that is already in the MTF through the custodian asset management plan. Because if we have to demolish and build, it means that it's a long-term plan that we need to perform in Munich. We also have Mbabane property, which needs to be refurbished. We also have Paris, The Hague, Van Loop, and London. In Van Loop, we're continuing with the work that we have already done, but now we are finalizing the three properties that were not done in the year 2021-22 financial year. Now, Honorable Chair, for the department to do this over the MTF, we are now introducing a pilot program, which is necessary and envisaged to fast track the renovations in our missions abroad. Because looking at the current units that we have, and looking at the demand that we currently have of the property maintenance, the units will not be able to finalize all the work at the time. And as they delay the work, more properties are getting dilapidated. So what we are fast-tracking this process, Honorable Chair, we are now appointing real estate management services. We will be utilizing the services of real estate management. The real estate management will deal with soft as well as hard facilities management, which is basically to maintain, sustain, revitalize, and modernize our state-owned property. So together with this real estate management and ourselves at head office, we have looked at this and saw that at least we will have more properties refurbished and renovated at a certain time. By end of the 3 years, we would have covered a lot of ground with the 796 million that is allocated to the department. Lastly, under this property acquisition, development and management, Honorable Chair, I would like to indicate that we are also bringing in an internship program. These are graduates are within the built environment. They will join the department within this unit, and this will benefit both the department as well as the graduates. These graduates will be involved with the development projects that I've already mentioned in New Delhi, in Gaborone, in Luanda, which are planned over the 3 years. Now, Honorable Chair, these graduates will be under the care of a chief director, a newly appointed chief director in the unit, and this chief director has a postgraduate diploma in property development and management. And we also, they will be under the care of a director who is also newly appointed in the section who started in May, who has a master's degree in real estate, who is also a member or affiliated with South African Council for Property Valuators. So these two individuals that the department has employed, who had the relevant skills, will then be the ones who will be taking care of these graduates, together with the real estate management companies that we will be having in our regions, that will assist us with the fast tracking of the refurbishment work, as well as the constructions that we want to take, I mean, to undertake of the three properties. Honorable Chair, lastly, I would like to cover the area around property disposal, as to where are we now with the 18 properties that have been identified for disposal. Just to also recap here, Honorable Chair, is that the 18 properties that have been identified for disposal, they were identified due to the fact that the missions were closed where they were, and they were closed based on the fact that the government of that of the country of accreditation has relocated the city from where they were before to where they are now. So we had to also relocate our offices, but then the problem was that we had already bought properties there. So those properties we are no longer using. So those properties are the ones that we are targeting for our first phase in terms of disposals. And we are also looking at the properties that are not used simply because we have now reduced the staff establishments of the mission. So there are more properties than the required number of officials that are in those missions. The case in Classic is the one in Vendor. Now, Honorable Chair, the Minister has given us a green light to start with the process of disposal. And this process of disposal started with us by appointing an interdepartmental committee, which is between National Treasury, Public Works, and the department. Now, this committee has also assisted us to establish or to develop a disposal policy. And it's also what we have done with all the 18 properties. We're now engaging in the valuation of those properties just to make sure that as we dispose them in a market, it's a market value that, or market-related value that we're going to get out of that disposal. Now, Chairperson, unfortunately, this disposal is now, it had to wait because we are at a stage now, all the work has been done. Now, what we need to do is to advertise the disposals. The advertisement has been assessed by our risk unit. It has been looked at by our legal team, but then the advice from our legal team was that we will have to wait for the Foreign Service Act to be enforced before DECO can then advertise the disposal of these properties and then engage in the entire process of assessing the bids and all of that. Now, based on that, or due to this delay that we are now experiencing with the disposal, we have then since taken a decision as a department that we need to secure these properties while we're waiting to dispose them, because we have noticed that as we were preparing for disposals, then there was no security of those properties and there was no cleaning of those properties. Now we have informed the missions that they must employ the security guard services. They must construct the wall around those properties that are about to be disposed, and they must also implement gardening services just to make sure that those properties are secured and those properties are also cleaned and they are kept at a state where we can still get value for the money when we dispose them. And the case, the missions that we have already dealt with or communicated with this information, and they are already implementing its vendors. Thank you very much, DDG Clayson, and thank you, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Chair, that concludes our presentation. Back to you, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much for allowing us.
No, thanks very much, Babu Umonyela, DDG. Mama Umkuku and Uma Muhlengiwe Ebrengu. No, thanks very much for that. As the chair has indicated earlier on, that he is having some natural challenges, of which myself also I'm experiencing. Hence, I'm not going to put my camera on. Thanks very much. I think that was very much informative, and I think members of the portfolio committee have taken notes for both presentations. And I would now take this opportunity to allow contributions through the hands. If co-members are having a challenge maybe of raising their hand, I only see Faber's hand, Honorable Faber's hand, followed by Honorable Beckman and Reverend Moshehu, followed by
Chairperson, sorry to interfere.
Yes.
There is supposed to be another report on the progress on the implementation, I mean on the progress on the regulations relating to Foreign Service Act. It was supposed to be also done today. Thank you, Chair.
I think Mr. Monyela, can you take us through quickly on that part so that when honorable members are engaging?
Yes.
They will engage.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We were following the guidance of the two presentations, but we are ready to also make a presentation on the Foreign Service Act, which was assented to by the President on 26 May 2020 and published in the Government Gazette of 4 June 2020. The date for entry into force now needs to be proclaimed by the President in order for the Foreign Service Act to enter into force. Regulations for its operationalization are required. It was decided, Honorable Chair, that the work on the various measures for implementation of the Foreign Service Act will be done in phases, with finalizing the regulations and specific codes required for implementation of the FSA under phase one. Now, Honorable Chair, the Foreign Service Act envisages four different measures in order to further elaborate provisions in the Act to strengthen its implementation. The four are: number one, regulations; two, directives; three, codes; and lastly, guidelines. So the draft regulations were approved by the executive and pre-certified by the state law advisors at the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. The regulations were sent to the government printers for publication, which is expected to be done during the week, in fact, this week, 6 to 10 June, and this will then be for public comment. 10 working days are provided for public comment, where after any comments received will be considered and where relevant, incorporated into the process for finalization. After finalization and final approval by the executive, the state law advisors at the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development will be requested to certify the regulations, after which then the president will be requested to proclaim a date for entry into force of the Foreign Service Act, and the regulations will be published at that time. So DERCO is currently prioritizing the work on the mechanisms necessary to strengthen and enhance the implementation of the Foreign Service Act I will, Chairperson, with your permission, now hand over to Advocate Sandhya Devat, our Chief State Law Advisor, to then make the presentation. Over to you,
Thank you very much, DDG. Honourable Members, good morning. With that introduction, I think we can go straight to slide 6, please. Yeah, we will start on the contents of the regulations itself. And we have also circulated the regulations, the actual regulations to you. It will just highlight some of the aspects. The definitions contains just two definitions, which we would not be covered in the Act, and we were of the view that that should be also then explained in the regulations itself. Regulation 2 links with Section 33C of the Foreign Service Act, and that provides for the rendering of protocol services that needs to prescribe. The term prescribed is defined in Section 1 of the Foreign Service Act as being prescribed by regulations as provided in 14 or by codes or directives as provided in Section 11. The protocol service provided will be elaborated in a code or a policy. That decision it will still be have to be made. Then on the eligibility requirements for any member that wants to apply to become a member of the Foreign Service are the following. If we could turn the page. So here we have a situation where a person, an official, would want to join the Foreign Service. So what do they require? They require that they have to complete their probation. They must have a top secret security clearance and a satisfactory performance record and completion of the relevant training for persons appointed on fixed contracts. And they only need to be in a position of top secret security clearance and then the completion of relevant training that are prescribed and required. Then Regulation 4 deals with the mandatory training prior to the application for the position abroad. So what do you need before you can apply? What you need is diplomatic training for the diplomatic service positions. If you are going to be part of the corporate service work, you will have to do mission administration program and foreign administration attaché course. For those that are employed in occupational specific jobs, they will have to do occupational specific training, and then national departments may have additional training requirements for their staff. Next slide, please. Regulation 5 prescribed then the training prior to taking up the position abroad. So this is now when you have actually been successful and you have to be placed, then what do you need now to actually go on the posting? And this is the training that are required. You are, regardless of your previous training, each official will have to do a mission preparatory preparation program. And then also for executive missions and minister plenipotentiary, they will have to attend a specific program for executive mission and ministers plenipotentiary. Then Regulation 6 has to do with the transfer requirements for taking up the position. This deals with more of an administrative side of the transfer. Next slide, please. So here we are talking about the submission before you go abroad, the submission of the signed contract of appointment or your transfer letter, so that you have signed the actual transfer letter. You have to submit your training certificates, in other words, to prove that you have attended the prescribed training that we have just now alluded to. There must be a submission of a handover report. In other words, you cannot just pick up your handbag and go. You have to do an actual handover report so that there is continuity in the work that has been done by the desk. There must be a confirmation by the relevant directorate in DIRCO that the official has attended the briefing sessions arranged by the branch. Heads of the branch in DIRCO must also attest that the head of mission designate has actually attended briefing sessions arranged by that branch. And then, of course, the compliance of all your administrative requirements, that is more of a practical level, what it is that you need to hand in, etc. Then Regulation 7 on disciplinary matters links with Section 6.1 of the Foreign Service Act that provides for the recall of members of the Foreign Service. Regulation 7 clarifies that the disciplinary inquiry must be done in terms of the disciplinary code of the relevant member of the Foreign Service. This is necessary because there are various departments that would not necessarily be under the Public Service Act and that have their own disciplinary proceedings, for instance, the police or defense and so on. So they will then be dealt with in their according to their own disciplinary code. Next slide, please. Regulation 8 deals with recall, and that again links with Section 6.5 and 6.6 of the Foreign Service Act. And it stipulates how the recall of officials will be done, and it sets out the procedure for the recall to be done in a smooth manner and not to be, hopefully not to be open for challenges later on. Next slide. Then, of course, it was necessary to include transitional arrangements. Those arrangements were necessary because when the Foreign Service Act and the regulations will enter into force, there will already be persons' admissions that has not been covered by the Foreign Service Act and this new regulations. Acts can't be applicable retrospectively. And also, of course, the same for regulation. So we had to make transitional arrangements for those that are currently admissions. And when they come back, they would then have to comply with all the stipulations in the Act and the regulations. So this is where we had to make this a specific provision so that we don't have a system where there are two regimes in place. Next slide, please. We envisage that the existing memoranda of understanding with our partner departments will continue to apply until such time that those are amended, and because that is the basis on which we regulate the relationship between the various departments and staff abroad. And then also for the current administrative code for Foreign Service will also still apply until such time as it has been issued as a code under Section 11.3. And the existing Foreign Service code will be deemed to be a code as envisaged under 11.3. That code is necessary, that needs to be implemented immediately. So once the code, once the Foreign Service Act and regulations come into force, that code will then be deemed to be a code issued under the Act itself. And then, of course, we just have the short title of the regulations, just to explain where this all fits in. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Thank you. And this is just matters that need to be addressed, and Ms. Bingo has already alluded to this, how we plan to do that. I just thought to add that, but she's already alluded to that. So I don't think there's any need for me to elaborate on this further. Thank you very much, Honourable Members.
Okay. No, thanks very much, the advisor for that presentation. I just want, before I've noted the hands, but before I also myself forget, let me just start by raising just a few questions, and then I will then allow other members so that I won't come back. One on the presentation, the first one. Mama Mkoko, you have raised the issue of a trade deficit between China and South Africa. And I think along your presentation, you have raised the fact that you are in the process of addressing that. I just want to check, how long do you think maybe that process might take? Because we wouldn't want a situation where the playing field as far as trade is concerned between the two countries is not leveled. You have a Goliath and a David situation. So I would like to get your response. As maybe you have a time frame that you are looking at in order to address that trade deficit. Number two is the one that is dealing with the issue that when companies of China are here in South Africa investing, they are regulated by our Labor Relations Act or legislation. But I just wanted to bring to your attention that we have as citizens, you know, not maybe as members of parliament, when you go around some of the shops, maybe in the townships, maybe in the cities where we have these companies, you always get complaints from the employees that it seems as if there's companies, not all of them, they don't comply with our labor relations legislations or laws. There is a high level of unfair labor practices that are taking place there that sometimes are tantamount to exploitation of workers. Now, I just want to check whether have you checked that issue, maybe working together with the Department of Labor and Employment, because maybe it might be something that is beyond your mandate as international relations and corporations. But as far as the issue of the partnership and everything, I think it falls within. So in terms of intergovernmental relations spirit, I think you can be able to ascertain whether what is being found in the public, whether it's true or not. I'm not saying it's true or not, but that's what it has been raised. On the presentation, Mamupeng, there is this issue where I think one Ambassador Khumalo in one of the meetings responded to us as far as the issue of Shiha of Iran, the issue of the title deed, that it becoming difficult to acquire it. There was the processes and all those things. But to cut the long story short, then he then said that the tax deed would be received in the next 2 months. However, the property is, however, not registered in South Africa's name. He said, despite maintenance plans in place, the allocated funds were not sufficient. But now, during the virtual oversight of March 2021, the ambassador said the title deed would be found. Okay, yeah, that's what he said. I'm just coming up with the date. But now, in this presentation, we are told that the title deed is not found from Iran government. Now, which is which? Because those are very two contradicting statements. So can we get clarity on that one as well? That will be my part. Honorable members, let me then allow. The first person was Honorable Faber, I remember.
Thank
you. Over to you, Honorable Faber. You will cover all the presentations. I'm sure you've been taking notes then, and all other members will follow. We'll do this.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, just on the first presentation, also on the bilateral agreements that we have with China and the BRICS countries, when we were listening to the importing, exporting to China. Now, I would like to know, was there discussions between our trade and industries between Minister Patel and on international relations? As we know, for instance, if you take steel that's coming from Sichuan and you take the raw material that's being shipped all to China, because we don't melt it yet, our own melteries, and then this raw material gets melted in China and then at an extravagant amount gets sold back to us. Now, you know, I mean, this is, I suppose, inter-trade relationships, but these type of things were already discussed with Minister Patel's side, that we should rather sell products that's already been at least worked with, that we don't just sell raw material and being exploited by China on this. Then on the second, so I would like to know how far we are on that part. And then on the second one, I once asked the question on our non-movable assets, which is our embassies, etc., in other countries. And what was said then was that it's already been given over to the Department of International Relations. Now, from what I've heard, that it's still in transition from this presentation. Now, I'm not sure if I'm right or wrong, but this is how I heard it. And I want to have clarity on that, on our non-movable assets, if it is all now under the control of international relations. Yeah, that is it. I think let me just first stay with those two. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks very much, Honorable. Mfundis, Babu Mshew, Honorable Man.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question under Pillar 3 has to do with the high-speed rail project. My question on that is whether a study has been made before that agreement was concluded of how many people will benefit from a high-speed rail project. We know that the majority of people in Gauteng do not benefit from Gautrain. Again, the majority of people who are using Gautrain are people who have cars. So they take their cars and they park them and then get on Gautrain. When you have many people who do not have access to rail. We know that our rail infrastructure has been destroyed. There are places where there are not even tracks. They have been stolen and so on. So I would want to know whether this high-speed rail project will benefit the majority of South Africans, particularly workers, who these days cannot use train, which is the cheapest mode of transport. How many people will benefit from this high-speed rail project, as there are many people who would also want to have access to rail transport? And if they already know where it is planned, that it would be helpful to know where this rail project will be implemented. And the second question, also about the trade deficit. Could the problem, the reason why we are selling less to China and buying more, have any to do with poor marketing? Are we marketing ourselves and our country well, our products well, or not? So is it about marketing or what is it about? Many times when the tourists come to South Africa, they love African arts. Have we gone into that market? Have we promoted our African crafts well to China? Or what could be the reasons why we are selling less? My other question has to do with stolen property that is sold abroad. We have steel, like the rail tracks that are being cut, the steel and sold. I'm not sure whether it's much or some, but we are told that some of it ends up in Zimbabwe and some of it end up in China. So my question on that is, has an agreement been made with our China counterparts to look out for or to confirm that the copper or the steel that is being sold to them is not stolen from South Africa? Because we are losing a lot of copper, billions actually, and also of steel to outside countries. All right, and then my last question is more of clarity. Can the presenter please tell us again why out of 180 scholarships, we have only utilized 57? I know something was said about it, but I need more further clarity on that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks very much, Muruti. Honorable Mshweu. Mkai, Megan Chetty from Pietermaritzburg. Honorable Megan Chetty, over to you, sir.
Siyabonga, Salo. Mine is to the presentation by Mrs. Bengu. Firstly, Chair, the escalation in cost to the refurbishment of our properties is mainly due to the negligence and the vandalism of the properties. Now, in Bindu, for example, we've employed security companies to look after the properties, yet vagrants have entered these premises, destroyed fixtures and fittings, stolen gate motors, and even damaged swimming pools. Mrs. Bengu made reference of us now engaging in companies to look after these properties. Can we ensure that we put a condition that any of these companies that have the services acquired by us will be held accountable to compensate the department for any losses that is incurred during their watch? The second one, Chairperson, is that I think it was 796 million that you said we've got that can be rolled over for the next 3 years, and there's a request for more funding. There are 18 properties that we are going to be disposing of. The income from those properties, has she taken that into consideration? acceleration, because that will definitely increase our coffers for refurbishments. Third one, again, regarding Namibia, we are disposing of properties that we have in Walvis Bay. Now, Chair, we know that with the discovery of oil, that Walvis Bay is going to be quite an economic hub on the continent. Surely, with forward thinking and forward planning, we should be considering trying to salvage some of those properties, because once this happens, we will be disposing of the existing properties at a loss. And then once the economic hub starts to materialize, we will go out there and get properties either to purchase or rent at an inflated price. So for old planning, the department consider at least trying to salvage one or two of the properties that they wanted to dispose of in Walvis Bay with the view of it becoming an economic hub. The next one, Chairperson, will deal with. We understand that the Foreign Service Board is still waiting for that to become into place, into action. But as a cost-saving measure, while, again, we were in Namibia, we were informed that there were properties that were disposed of by the department in 2018. It came as a shock to myself and the Honorable Inkosi, because a report of that never come before this committee. But the first time we heard of it. But if that did happen, and whilst waiting for the FSA to come into action, can we not dispose of some of those properties that are very dilapidated, with saving us some cost to try and engage with companies to try and secure them by the very same process that was engaged in 2018? And lastly, Chairperson, can we get confirmation from the department that, as she said in her report, that the properties will be disposed of at market-related value and not municipal value? The reason, this Chairperson, is again, when we were there on oversight, the presentation that we were given was on properties with municipal-related value. Now, we all know that municipal value is much less than a market-related value. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chetty, for your contribution. Honorable Bergman.
Chair, thanks very much. I must say that people sound proud about the relationship, the multilateral and bilateral relationship with China. I, for one, know what it must be like for countries like Zimbabwe to know in the informal markets that when they go and see T-shirts made in China and they see their tourist memorabilia replaced by gimmicks from China instead of homemade traditional items, how heartbreaking that must be in terms of what was a thriving home economy now becoming an imported economy. And I think the importance of that is, if by my experience in SADC and my experience on African Liberal Network, is many governments, well, not, let me not say many, but a lot of democratic governments in Africa believe that a loss in their party membership has actually been because of their support or their openness to accept, we would call it, bilateral trade. But I think in Continental Shift, the book by Richard Poplack, some would say charity from China. Now, I say it respectfully because I do believe that we do have an important relationship with China in many aspects, but we must not, we must look at quality and quantity as two dynamics in an equilibrium. We must not negate the one over the other. You know, I want to ask Mashabana and you get out of the legacy that's been left. I once asked her why they believe that China gives us money. And she says, no, because they love us, you know. And I said to her, do you not believe that, you know, nothing's for free? And you know, you've got to look at the facts that you look in Zimbabwe, you look in Botswana, a lot of these DRC, a lot of these projects that China gets involved in are monetary transactions. They're not love transactions. They're not friendships. They're not relationships. There's money involved. There's business involved. So if a country defaults in the payments, China becomes partners or owners of those resources. Now, people often say, but there's going to be a Silk Road from South Africa or Africa to China. Well, what is that Silk Road? Let's interrogate that Silk Road. That Silk Road is not a highway between China and South Africa. That Silk Road, in my honest, humble opinion, is to get resources from Africa into China as quickly as possible. So, again, a country that has a history of colonization must just be wary that they're not flirting themselves into another future history of colonization. What we need to be careful of, we talk about BRICS romantically as if we equal partners in BRICS. And what we need to understand here is that we're the ones taking the money from the development bank. We're the ones that get told what to do. We're the ones that, when it comes to wars in Ukraine, Russia tells us what our position should be. Russia tells us what we need to do. And it's, you know, we have to appreciate that when it comes to BRICS, we sit at the table. We must appreciate. So, with all this money flowing towards us, and with all the benefit we're getting from this bank, let's not be blinded by the fact that we will have to repay these loans. Let's not be blinded by the fact that these loans are not for free, that there will be an interest on these loans. So I do urge with caution that the people that are trying to romanticize our relationships, let's get real about the relationships. And as I say, respectfully, it's not that I have a problem with China. I really don't. I believe that they will be important trading partners, because that's where I believe that the importance is, that we must look at trade and not aid. So from what we want with China, it's not that they must tell us which ambassador we send there. And I see that we finally got our ambassador there. I'm not sure how he got his security clearance all of a sudden, but we've now got our ambassador there. So now we have... you know, we must look at trade as the important agreement, and that must be the focus, is trade and not aid. When it comes to the properties, this is an important part, is to look at the rentals. Where there's high amount of rentals, we should be either buying property or we've got to be looking at why there's so many rentals. And I know that for a fact that in certain areas, we've got superstars that are looking for high rentals in high areas. And we can ill afford that. We've got to make sure that we're not paying rentals for people that are trying to be celebrities and living in areas that those suburbs are just high end and that don't need to be there. Second of all, I also know that if we go through an audit, that we are paying for certain ambassadors that have children that are over 20 years old. Why are we renting properties to accommodate that when their children could be in university, or, you know, there's other ways in which they can be accommodated without us having to foot the bill for that in particularly. So also in that vein, selling properties. We must look at properties that are in top prime areas. Although now we've lost that opportunity with COVID markets, we must wait for maybe just look at where the market wave, where it maybe gets to a higher crest. But we need to look at where we're at the prime of that market. And we need to maybe look at ourselves honestly and say, do we really need to be in the prime areas of certain cities? Or would the countries forgive us for maybe going a suburb or two out and getting an embassy or getting a residency in those suburbs just out of town? And I think that exercise has not been performed yet. And I think that our department would better spend their time
doing that exercise. And as I say, you know, if we could just maybe guide them into that direction.
Thanks very much, Honorable Bergman. Honorable Nkosi.
Thank you, Shepard, and my apologies for joining the meeting late. I had a glitch myself. I just want to welcome the contributions, I mean, the inputs from the department. I just have a number of questions relating to all the inputs. On the input on our bilateral relations with China, I just want to ask on the challenges of the trade imbalance or the trade deficit between ourselves and China, whether there is anything that is being done to encourage DTIC and related departments to ramp up on the manufacturing side, because that will be the only way in which we'll be able to trade in value-add commodities with any other country, whether it's China or Zimbabwe or Djibouti. So I think those challenges need to be addressed through a concerted effort of ensuring that manufacturing in the economy is revived and revitalized such that we are able to produce our own goods. Our reality in South Africa is that we are an assembly point, whether you'd like to have it otherwise. We are just an assembly point in the motor industry, in technologies, etc. People bring things here, we assemble them for forwarding to Europe. And the challenge is, and has always been, from the 60s or whatever, to develop a manufacturing capability that is not only based on the mining and mineral sector, because that's how it was skewed. I'll come to that point later. The second point, Chair, is on the issue around conditionalities that we must insist on. I think you alluded on that issue, what or not Honorable Bergman calls your monologue. I don't agree with that, but since you're not responding, it's up to you. You know, Chair, the sense I have is that when we negotiate bilateral agreements, particularly with China, we do not insist enough on issues of labor, local labor intensive recruitment programs, including skilling, where these skills are available. I mean, my experience, I've worked in several situations where, you know, China insists on bringing its own labor to execute tasks that can be done by local labor. Secondly, China insists on bringing its own materials that are done according to their own specifications, and that creates a situation where for post-construction maintenance, you then have to look to Chinese markets for those products. You can just check their products and how it forces you to go back to them all the time. On the FOCAC ministerials, my sense is that the input says China announced certain initiatives in various fields or competencies of government. I don't have a sense that we have a situation where we ourselves take to focus ministerial matters that we want to table. That would include trade in goods that are finished by us. People seem to think that we can only produce artificial cultural things I think that's a mistaken thing. It's one, it should be but one of finished value-add commodities that we can place on the agenda. I would like that addressed. The second issue related to that is my sense, looking at, I mean, just observing across departments and what the input says, the presentation, there doesn't seem to be a central coordinating point where we register investments and project management so that our goals as contained in our NDP, in government-specific threat plans, and in what our economy requires, where we sit as government and panel build these things and say in our trade, we therefore need the following in technology, in knowledge exchange, in manufacturing, in trade on finished or unfinished products, et cetera. So this may not be directed to DEFCO, but it's something that we must continue to do in government so that our trade relations really create a situation where there is no imbalance, or we cannot complain about imbalance and we become equal players. On the property development scheme, I mean, presentation, I welcome the input by the department, and I can see that there is a good response to the critique that we have always presented to the department since 2019. And finally, the department is responding in a way that is going to resolve the issue. I will refrain from going to the specificities, because we've dealt with this and we're expecting the department to respond on certain issues. I just want to know what the difference is and the relationship between the property acquisition strategy for 2017 and the property management strategy for 2021. Are they not addressing the same thing? My understanding is if you have a framework, it will be followed by a strategy so that we are clear what the purpose of each is, avoid overlaps, and avoid being entangled in strategies and framework that don't speak to each other. Chair, because the issue of colonialism has been brought up by Honorable Bergman, it is opposite then, with due respect, you know, to say if we want to discuss colonialism and imperialism, we do so in a very honest, open, and in a way that reflects the reality of history. I hold nothing for China, I hold nothing for the USA and the UK and France. But our reality, the lived reality of the African continent, is that the devastation that has been caused in this continent has been as a result of both colonialism and imperialism. You do not have to be a rocket scientist to know that raw materials in this continent are being pillaged illegally sometimes, and sometimes through very structured economic dependency and past dependency mechanisms, to underdevelop the continent through monopolizing trade routes and transporting of raw materials to the entire of Europe. Europe stands today as it is because of its exploitation through colonialism and imperialism of the whole world. So if you want to have a debate about that, we should do so very openly and clearly, and not single out one country that is a latecomer to this project. The African continent suffers because of imperialism and colonialism, and that you just look at how South Africa and Southern Africa is today in relation to Britain, the UK, France, and the USA. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that the mineral energy and the military energy complex influence or continues to influence our trade relations. We can debate this, and I'm open to it, Chairperson. on a long-term basis and on a continuous basis. I think also our interactions at various levels with fraternal organizations with like-minded organizations is very important across the board, ideologically, politically, and otherwise. But that should not cloud us in looking at what should be our foreign policy orientation and what should constitute our own national interests. It should help us to clarify, but it should not cloud our issues when we deal with our relationships with various players in this field. And I'm saying, Chair, if you want a debate on imperialism and colonialism, I'm open to it. We can discuss for six months here.
Honorable Kosa, are you done?
Apologies, Chair. I'm done. Sorry. Bye.
Okay. No, thanks very much, Honorable Ngozi. I think this was your last, you are the last and the hands that have been raised. Of course, yes, I've seen what Honorable Beckman wrote, and I really wanted to create a two-pool scenario in this committee, so I just ignored it. but also, the issue of colonialism and imperialism, yeah, it will take us a long, long, long debate, because China itself was once also a victim of the very same thing. And I wouldn't like us in this committee to deviate from what we are discussing and then bring ideological debates. But if members want to do that, we can set a date. We can ask the chair to set a date and then we engage on it. But I promise you it won't end that day. It will carry on, I don't know for how many years. I just wanted to check as a last point, to our state law advisor. Since now you've outlined the processes with regard to the regulations, because one of the things that we have been raising as a committee is that when are these regulations going to be expedited? Because all the time when you say let's implement Foreign Service Act, then we are told that no, we are still busy with the regulations. Now, the process that you have outlined is a long process. The question for me is that now, what do we do in between? Then do we not do anything as far as implementation of that act until that process that will culminate to the president? Then putting his signature on it. Then where does it put us as a department and as a committee in terms of our oversight role, and the issues that we have raised that they are not moving because of the non-implementation of the act. And then one of the reasons is the issue of regulations. Thank you very much, Babu Umonyele. Can I then hand over to you and your team to respond to the issues and questions that have been raised by honorable members?
Yes, thank you very much.
Over to you.
Thank you very much, honorable chair and honorable members. My colleagues are going to assist in responding, and perhaps we should start with Madam Nkuku on the matter of our relations with China. The questions that are being posed, then we can deal with issues of property and perhaps lastly the issues of the Foreign Service Act, perhaps in that order.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Much appreciated. Honorable Chair and members, I will request that Ms. Mvebe takes the question that came from the Honorable Reverend with regards to the high-speed rail. I will respond to some of those that she would understand to be insufficiently responded to. I kindly request that. Honorable Chair, you raised an interesting one on how long would it take for us to address the trade deficit. As you have correctly stated, Chair, that this is the work that needs an intergovernmental and all of government approach from the part that DIRCO can play. We need to work closely with the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition on this one. And therefore, I would not put a time frame because we usually set goals for ourselves to say after 5 years, we should have reduced the trade deficit. And in our submission, Chair, we are stating that over the past number of years, I think we're saying three, we have been seeing a reduction in the trade deficit, which means it is work in progress. All these other interventions that we are making in terms of building capacity in South Africa, in terms of bringing the procurement team from China to South Africa so that we are able to make sure that the South African exporters understand what are the conditions and compliance issues that the Chinese expect as the receiving a country or the receiver of what we are selling to the Chinese. I will add on that with what the honourable members have asked in terms of our engagement with the DTIC again, and what is Minister Patel saying in this? Chair, I think some of the issues have been answered through the questions that the honorable members were asking. The main challenge, which I think the last honorable member was very responsive to those, that the key issue is what we are doing in South Africa in terms of our manufacturing capability. If that capability does not exist in South Africa, it forces us to sell that which we can sell, that is readily available, which is the raw product or the raw goods. So when we sell a raw material, we earn less, and that skews the trade balance in favor of those partners who are able to sell us processed goods. So what is important is exactly what the last honorable member, I think it was Honorable Ngosi, who was saying, that it is important that we look inside and see what is it that we can do. And we have done a lot of policy framework in building our manufacturing capability. So that leads us to sell those things that we have readily. But if we are focused in terms of building the manufacturing capability, it assists us in selling finished goods. I give a simple example, Honorable Chair, of another country in Asia still that we have a trade deficit, that will be Vietnam, amongst many. And with Vietnam, we are selling coal, we are selling and other agricultural products. That is good, it's what we have. But from them, we are buying a Samsung product. So you can see that in terms of volume, the coal that we're selling to the Vietnams will be higher volume, but we need value to earn money. So the value of the Samsung product, the high-tech product that we are buying from Vietnam, will make them have a trade deficit that will make us have a trade deficit that is big because of what is in our basket. So I think Honorable Ngozi clearly outlined it when you were saying we need that manufacturing capability built strongly for us to sell the value-added products, and those will be earners of capital for us. The conversation, Honorable Members, is continuing through the Department of Trade and Industry in terms of exactly that. In all sectors, not only in the steel sector, the work that we are doing through the work streams that the DTI is leading in various master plans is making sure that we are able to bring together all the capabilities in a particular master plan. If it is an auto sector master plan, it will respond exactly to what Honorable Ngozi was referring to when you were saying South Africa is just an assembly point, a global assembly point. So all the master plans are an attempt for government to respond to these challenges. So I would say it is what we are doing in South Africa that will lead us to reduce the trade deficit. But the other things that we can do in terms of ensuring that which we send to China is able to sell through China, we do negotiate those and also address all the capabilities or capacity challenges that we might be faced with. On the issue of compliance with South African labor laws, Honorable Chair, you are correct. And the Department of Employment and Labor, when we engage with them on this issue, what they do is to use their compliance officers or the inspectors who are inspecting their compliance with labor laws. And every time that they get to identify this challenge, they use the enforcement agencies, it will be the CCMA, and related. And we are checking, maybe Advocate Sandhya will help us on this one, if we are able in the investment agreement to make this issue of compliance with labor laws, if it is possible that it can be done. So it is something that it's another avenue that we can explore in order to make sure that we deal with this matter. The same issue, Honorable Chair, with the Chinese labor that is exported to South Africa. I think on that one, Chair, we are responding because it is the conditions that we state when we are negotiating with them. There is what we call in South Africa the critical skills list. Then we can't grant work visas for people who are bringing skills that are already available in South Africa. Therefore, we are responding to that temptation by the Chinese to want to bring skills that are already available in South Africa. South Africa to make sure, because that list of critical skills is ensuring that South African jobs are protected and also there is skills transfer. So government is responding in that fashion. And on the trade deficit, Honorable Reverend Meshwe, is attributable to the things that we have stated. And also, we need to do more of marketing of what we are offering. And what is critically important to contextualize our engagement with Asia broadly. As you would, as the honorable members would appreciate that pre-1994, we did not engage with Asia extensively as we are currently engaging. So it is a new area. So is South Africa to some of the Asian businesses. And they also have the numbers to trade amongst themselves. That is why we do these outward selling missions. That is what we are taking out to the Asia in terms of marketing or promoting South Africa, both as an investment destination and also as a tourist destination and also as a competitive exporter of a credible goods. So it is the work that we are doing through the DTIC that we are promoting South Africa, but it is a space that we are navigating carefully because we are new, relatively new in the area, and we are competing with those who have been trading. And they are trading amongst themselves because they are a huge market amongst themselves. But we understand exactly what we're doing, but we are doing the marketing that you are referring to through our outward selling mission. We also would like to respond to the conditionalities. I know that the honorable member is raising his concerns, which he refers to as romanticizing the BRICS relationship. I would rather, as the branch that is responsible for the work that we are doing through BRICS, state that upfront, we are equal players in the BRICS partnership. We might not have the population in terms of numbers. We might not have the equal GDP, but when we engaging at BRICS level, we engage as equals. And as South Africa, I think Mr. Munyela, as the DDG responsible, also among others, our public diplomacy would state clearly that as South Africa, we pursue an independent foreign policy, and therefore it is not dictated to by the partners that we have through BRICS and in any other forum. And that is why we are saying through our chairship in 2018, we were able to achieve that which we signed, which is the vaccine center, that the agreement that we signed in March. So we engage as equal partners, and we also look at what we are getting from the loans that we took from the New Development Bank. We look at interests that are offered by similar institutions, and we therefore take that which makes sense economically and financially for us. So I understand exactly, and I agree with the honorable member that we are pursuing trade and not aid, and we are the least recipients of aid from our partners, less than 1% of the South African GDP or budget is received from aid. So we are not an aid dependent country. Therefore, we're trading, but what we're trading in is what we need to sharpen domestically in South Africa, and it is not dictated to South Africa by our partner. Then the last point before, what you might call conditionalities. Honorable Chair and honorable members, when we negotiate even the technical assistance, we have mentioned that we are unable to agree on some of the financing modalities with the Chinese government. It is because we take the South African national interests seriously. I'll make an example. For example, on that the China allocation of that 1 billion on infrastructure development projects. The sticky point there is the funding modalities. One, they would want to have a state guarantee, and our national treasury, informed by the national interest, says that no, we are overextended. We cannot offer the state guarantees for this billion. And also, we're looking at the interest rate that they are negotiating, the percentages, and we are saying, no, this is not what we can afford. So in a negotiation, it's a give and take, but I want to bring a sense of comfort to the Honorable Portfolio Committee that we do take the matters of South Africa's national interest at heart, and therefore we don't take, we negotiate, because we consider ourselves as equal partners, and where we don't agree, we are not forced by our partners to take what they are giving us. So we have the South Africa's national interest at the back of our minds every time we negotiate with our partners. And everything else, the others, I consider, Honorable Chair, as comments which are invaluable in the work that we are doing, and they're also enriching the work that we are doing. And that one-stop shop is what Honorable Ngosi is raising, that a central point of coordination. That is what the DTIC is doing. But we all agree that there are areas of improvement that we can factor into the work that we are doing. Having said that, Honorable Chair, I would request Ms. Yolison Verbe to take over the floor to clarify the third pillar when in far as the high-speed rail project is concerned, as well as the scholarships. Honorable Reverend Monsieur, the reason why we were only able to afford to take 57 scholarships out of 180 is what we could afford when it comes to topping up the scholarships that we have received, so that we make sure that the students that we send to China are financially stable, and their stay is sustainable, financially. And therefore, we could not cut our dress with the material that was offered to us. We could only take the piece that we can afford, and it was affordability that made us to take 57 out of the 180 because of the top up that the Department of Higher Education and Training could afford at that point in time. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I would request Ms. Yolisa to respond, and any other areas if she could be allowed where she thinks she needs to add more. Thank you very much.
Yes, you can proceed.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee, DDGs on the platform and colleagues.
Before I respond on the high-speed rail, I just wanted to emphasize just a few points on the trade deficit, because it was a question that was emphasized a lot. Let me start by saying that addressing trade deficit is a rather complicated and complex process, and it's difficult to put a time frame because there are so many factors that are affecting trade deficit. If you were to look at our trade figures for 2021, we have noted, in fact, that there has been a decrease in the trade gap between South Africa and China. In 2021, that decrease amounted to 4 billion rand. However, within the context of the 10-year strategic program on cooperation, one of the key elements that we're looking at our relationship between China and South Africa from the existing areas of cooperation and focusing on the future is the issue around focusing on the trade deficit. So there's a lot of initiatives that we're going to be doing with China, like trade missions to South Africa, promoting products to China, but also to make sure that there is access to the market in China of 1.4 billion people and 700 of those who are middle class. So we're working very hard with our missions in China, with business community, with the DIC and all relevant departments to really address the trade deficit. But also just to also highlight that the trade deficit issue is also complicated by the COVID-19. I mean, China at this point in time is implementing COVID zero policy, which is very stringent and does not allow movement of people, movement of goods within China. So that also is complicating the issue of the trade balance and also affecting the supply chain of movement of goods between South Africa and China. So we also need to look into other factors that are affecting the trade deficit. I'll also like to also add to say we really are putting a lot of emphasis on importing high value added products, sorry, on exporting high value added products to China. And China has made a commitment to South Africa that we are going to support your industrialization, your manufacturing, and your skills transfer in all areas that South Africa has indicated as important for the country. But I think as one of the honorable members has said, the intergovernmental coordination is very important. At this point in time, we also have drafted what we called China Country Strategy. In that strategy, we're trying to come with all government departments of South Africa and say, how do we engage China in a very coordinated approach so that DGI does not deal with China without engaging agriculture, without engaging science and technology and all other relevant departments. So as DERCO, we are responsible for making sure that the coordination between these departments is working well. So we are in the process of looking back and reflecting on the country strategy to make sure that we take advantage of the possibilities and opportunities in China, but in a more intentional and coordinated approach from the government point of view. I also want to highlight that on the issue of Chinese companies making sure that they comply on labor law and other employment equity laws of South Africa. Indeed, as Acting JD Jim Kuku has indicated, the Department of Employment and Labor is the responsible entity to make sure that China complies. One example in mind is the Huawei matter. The Minister of Employment and Labor has engaged the Chinese embassy, has engaged the Chinese government to make sure that the 90% of staff that were indicated to be foreign nationals within 3 years, that is reduced to 50%. So that some of the engagements that we're having with China to make sure that indeed they comply to labor laws of the country and to the employment equity and other regulations of South Africa. So we work together with employment, labor to make sure that when we engage China, we come as South Africa and as different departments that are engaged on this issue. I just wanted to make an example on the Huawei technologies of South Africa, just the issue that was handled just recently. The issue of the high-speed rail, if I may come to that, Honourable Member, Reverend, the MOU that was signed between South Africa and China on the high-speed rail has been nullified. We do not have that MOU, and it's inactive. And therefore, what we are looking at now is to engage the Department of Transport with the Chinese authority to now start a new feasibility study that will look at really the geographical areas, the socio-economic sectors that will be affected in this big project. By the way, just as a matter of information, the Chinese initially, they thought that this project is a bit complex and a bit costly, and therefore did not show much enthusiasm to be engaged. But we want to engage them afresh. We're working with also the Office of the Infrastructure and Investment of the Office of the President, Department of Transport, to really make sure that we look at the new feasibility study and also finding modalities that will align with how we want projects to be funded in South Africa as advised by National Treasury. So just to summarize on that, there is no MOU anymore. We are now going to be doing a new feasibility study and looking at all these factors that you've raised that we need to look into in terms of the high-speed rail. I think the matter of the scholarship, the DDG has touched on it, but just to add to say, more than the DHET, that they have to provide or top up funding for some of the students that needs to go to study in China. We also have language issues. Some students don't want to take up these scholarships because of language issues, because of culture. We also now are dealing with Chinese who have, because of this zero COVID policy of China, have closed on students going back to China. So some of our students are unable to go back to China to complete their studies, and therefore they are studying here and are continuing with their studies online, which is also complicating issues because of time difference, because of language, and because some of these studies have to be done in physical laboratories, and therefore we are unable to do that. So we are engaging the delegation tomorrow of China around these issues to open up our borders for our students, but also to make sure that the scholarships that are offered, there is support to some of our students that are studying there, including the medical students that are studying in China. Just to conclude from my side, I've noted the comment around FOCAC. Indeed, FOCAC has raised 8 areas where we can work with China. But just to assure the committee members that as we coordinate with other departments, we emphasize that the projects around FOCAC should be about South Africa. They should focus on making sure that we are addressing really the issues of triple challenges, that we should not compromise on job creation, on transfer skills, but also on technology transfer. So we are going to embark on projects based on what South Africa wants for South Africa. And I don't think we will compromise in that regard. I cannot overemphasize the issue of central coordinating. It's something that we need to improve on. It's something that we need to really work on. And we are going to be engaging different departments, different stakeholders, as we are implementing the recently signed 10-year program of strategic cooperation with China, which is a very broad document that talks to existing areas of cooperation, but also looking into future and potential areas that we need to take advantage, given China's economic growth, given China's technological advancement and in other areas, including in construction and real estate. So we're going to be looking into that, Chair, and I just want to emphasize that, indeed, our national interest will take priority. Thank you so much.
Honorable Chair, I'll take a cue from De Clayson, who said I can come in after acting DDG, Ms. Cindy Mpupu. Honorable Chair, let me first start by welcoming the input by honorable members. Based on what has been raised today, the first question on the title did. Let me emphasize again, Honorable Chair, as of today, the department does not have a title deed for Tehran. However, as we were in this meeting, there are positive developments that took place where the mission just confirmed that they've been conducted by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Tehran. And they've been told that there is a ceremony that is planned at the end of June for the handing over of that title deed. So we are hoping that by end of June or by beginning of July, the department will then have the title deed for Tehran after that handing over ceremony that is planned by Iran in this regard. On the issue of immovable property under control of DECO, is it a yes or a no? Honorable Chair, based on the function shift that was done by DPSA in 1999, the department is having control of the properties. However, the only portfolio that is not under the control of DECO as we speak today is the control of disposing properties abroad. Hence, the department is pursuing by all means to have the Foreign Service Act operationalized. So once we have it operationalized, then we will also be having the function to dispose our properties. But all other functions for the property management have been shifted to DECO in 1999, including the budget thereof. That is why I was talking about a budget of 769 million, which is what we have for the next 3 years. On the issue of the security companies, I take note, Honorable Chairperson, on that. On the condition that we need to also include around the liability when it comes to vandalism of the properties which are under the care of security guards or security company. I will work with our legal team as well as the missions that will be employing the security guards so that we can have that condition in to ensure that the liability is taken care of. Then on the issue of the income from disposal of property, Honorable Chair, I did not include this part as part of the budget or as part of the money that we can utilize as a department when we maintain or renovate our property. Simply because we did apply to National Treasury for a self-financing mechanism. That's what we call. When you dispose a property, then you get the money back. It calls self-financing mechanism. We did apply for that. However, National Treasury said, we will not give you a blanket approval. You will only apply as and when you have disposed a property. And this can only be granted to you through an adjusted estimate process after it has been assessed by all the committees that need to assess it. So at this stage, it is not a guarantee that when we dispose property, we will then get back that money or even pass a part of the money that will be receiving or proceeds from that. So hence, we did not put it as part of that. However, we are going to pursue that. As and when we sell, we will apply for the self-financing mechanism. For the Waffles Day, Honorable Chair, I take note as well of that, that now it's going to be an economic hub. Maybe we look, we need to do a forward planning. We'll go back to our drawing board. We'll consult the DG as well as the minister in this case, and then we will see how best then we can capitalize on that process. Then on the cost-saving measures that Honorable Member spoke about, Honorable Chair, the issue of properties that were disposed in 2018, these were the properties that were disposed under the care of Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. Now, because, again, as I indicated earlier on, they are the custodian when it comes to the disposal of properties. Now, the department has been engaging DPWI over the years since 1819 to where we are now, in them assisting the department in disposing those properties after the first phase that was done with them in 2018. But since then, we have not been successful. Hence, now the department has been pushing very hard to then get the Foreign Service Act operationalized so that we can then take over that function of disposing properties and deal with all the properties that we have in the department. So this is why that 2018 process has not kicked in. It has not been effective. We have been trying with DPWI, but we have not been successful in this instance. Municipality values versus market value, Chairperson. In our strategy, we are clear that we would like to dispose our property at a market value. Hence, we do the valuation of our property. However, we have agreed as a committee, the committee that sits for the disposal, that in places where the municipality value are governed by the act that says the municipality values are a market value and it can be proven, this is what we will utilize, and this is what we are using in Namibia, because we have been given information that the municipality value are governed in such a way that those values are relative to the market value. Hence, we are using them in this instance. But we are looking at a market value so that we can have value for our money. I have taken note on the matters that have been raised around rentals, and we will look at all of those issues around rentals that have been raised. I think there are very good points that were raised there as well, which we need to follow up in this meeting. The last two, Honorable Chair, the last two matters that were raised around the selling of the properties in the prime areas. Honorable Chair, this is the phase two of our disposal that we are going to embark on. The phase one is where we dispose all the properties that are not used, that are accessed to the department. Then phase two will be looking at the properties that are at the prime area where it is very expensive for us to maintain them. However, this process will work very well after we have struck an agreement with National Treasury on the self-financing mechanism, because it will mean that when we dispose a property in a prime area, that disposal proceeds will come back to the department, and then we buy or we procure or we acquire another property in the same country but in a less prime area. It will work well in that area. But where we dispose but take money to Treasury, but now we are left without the property, we are left without the money, it will then mean that the department must take from its own coffers and then look for the rent or build in this instance. So we are working with National Treasury just to make sure that at least we strike that agreement with them around self-financing mechanism. The last question around the differences between the strategy acquisition and I mean acquisition strategy as well as the strategic framework. Honorable Chair, the honorable member is correct. There is a relationship between those two documents. The unfortunate thing is that the department started with the acquisition strategy. What encompasses everything is the strategic framework. Within the strategic framework, you then find the acquisition portion, the development, the maintenance, refurbishment, renovation, the leases, the funding mechanism. So the acquisition strategy is a chapter in the strategic framework where now we go out and say, in a bigger scale, in the next 3 years, what are the strategic areas where we want to acquire and what funding mechanism are we going to use and what funding models that are we going to use? In terms of the Foreign Service Act, they call these chapters as codes, saying each and every area of the work around property must have a code that governs it. So meaning that we are done with the acquisition. Now we have to now work around the development strategy. We must finalize the leases strategy and we must finalize the maintenance strategy. So we still have work to do based on the framework that we have already established. But now we have to work out the actual operational document that will call it either acquisition, I mean, either development, either maintenance, either leases strategy for the department for the next 3 to 5 years. Thank you very much, DDG Clayson Mangela, and thank you, Honorable Member and Chairperson.
Advocate Tivet.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members, and also for the opportunity to present the Act to you. Honourable Mpanza has expressed exactly our sentiments that this process is taking so long. I can confirm that the government printer has indicated to us that they will hopefully either publish this on Friday or on Monday next week. Then we will have 10 days and then we will then take, we have planned to take another week to incorporate in all the comments, and then we will go through the process of getting approval from our minister, the letter to the president, and the publication. So we are almost there. I sincerely hope so. And it will then, I think the main job and also the Portfolios Committee's perseverance with us in this whole process and getting the Act done will now, I think it will come to fruition and hopefully still, hopefully within two or so months. I don't know how long the president will take. But we have done some footwork also in the presidency, and they are aware that we want this to enter into force as soon as possible. So yes, I can say we are now, I can see the final moment, and hopefully when we discuss this again, we will have some further good news for you on progress. But we are almost there. Thank you so much, Honourable Members.
No, thanks very much, Ma'am Tivet, for that response. Honorable members, I only see Honorable Nkosi's hand. I don't know whether it's an old hand or it's a new hand. Because if it's an old hand, it will then mean that we are happy with the responses and the engagement with the department led by DDG Mangela, and that we'll then have to come to concluding our meeting. Honorable Nkosi?
No, sure. Thank you, Chairperson. It's not an old hand. I just want to suggest, Chair, that on the issue of bilateral trade, my suggestion is that we convene a joint meeting with the Portfolio Committee on DTIC to discuss trade in Asia and East Asia, and what their role is, how they are implementing their own strategies, just to understand and get a feel of exactly what is happening across government, of course, but particularly between ourselves and SDECO and DTIC. My suggestion is that that process be preceded by a thorough analysis on our side before we even go into that, so that we don't go into the meeting and start a discussion. We should go into a meeting which focuses more on discussing challenges and mapping a way forward. Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, we are lost. Mr. Lubabalo, may you please just check the chairperson? Mr. Skwela, how's it now?
Yes, Honorable Ngosi, I am online with Honorable Mpanza.
Okay.
He lost connection. Honorable Nkosi, he is trying to get back, but he just answered. Honorable Nkosi, Honorable Mpanza seems to be having connection problems, and he's asking that would you kindly wrap up the meeting for him? Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Annette. I would like to thank the honorable members for attending and thank the department for providing the valuable input on both items.
Honourable members, and I think there is acting DG, DG Munyela. Thank you very much for your attendance. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.